Hi, today is June 17th, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 209. I'm Todd Ogasawara, and I'm not actually in it. I missed it because of a giant traffic jam. And so my alleged good friend, John Westfall, and you'll hear why I call him alleged good friend later as you listen to the podcast, and our mutual friend, Don Sorsinelli, filled in for me. Thank you, guys. And for the record, the name of the street you guys were trying to pronounce is Kalanianaole. It's pronounced just like it's spelled, Kalanianaole. Any rate, here we go. Thanks, guys, for taking over the show. And maybe I'll be back in 2:10.
So I don't know what we can do on the pre-show. We've never had a pre-show before.
I figure by the time we figure it out, he's going to be on.
So I guess I need to the rambling introduction. So let's see. Todd puts in the crazy music, and then the line is, "Hi, today is June 17, 2017. This is the pre-show for Mobile Views Podcast number 209. I am joined today with my good friend Don Sorsinelli. Todd Ogasawara is stuck in traffic somewhere. I mean, he's on an island, so you wouldn't think that traffic could be that bad, but apparently his car does not fly yet, and there are no ways for him to get to us. So, Don, what are you looking most forward to talking about on the podcast tonight when we finally get to it?
Trying to figure out how Todd gets stuck in traffic consistently, and considering the limited number of roads, the finite number of roads on an island, he seems to manage to find the one with the most traffic most of the time.
I suspect that he gets caught up in his doodles that he wants to talk about. He's been getting much better at them, but I think they're becoming all-consuming. I think that he might have a problem remembering to set them aside and hit the accelerator and move through the traffic. Todd might have caused the large traffic jam. He didn't say that someone else did. So in his email correspondence, he may have actually been the problem and not part of the solution.
Just so everybody knows, that this will eventually be titled the pre-show that was all about beating up Todd because he wasn't here for the regular show.
Yeah, so this will likely be my last show then, because Todd will take out his vengeance. I will no longer be the good friend John Westfall. I will be the who not shall not be spoken about. Okay, so Todd has reached out through email.
This news just in.
CKHON2.com for my traffic situation. Water main break. Well, yes, Todd, when you run into them because you're doodling rabbits.
That's what happens when you hit a fire hydrant.
Yes, they tend to go up. Okay, so I went to such website, and my first thing is tens of thousands gather at Magic Island to welcome Hokulua home. I don't think that's what's going on. Oh, no. Expect major delays. Geez, that's a long name. Kalaniaole Highway. Okay, yeah, I butchered that horribly. And H1 eastbound due to water main break, not caused by Todd Ogasawara.
Okay. Actually, traffic is caused by GPS not being able to pronounce really long Hawaiian names on the islands.
We've got to ask him about that, because I grew up in an area in the in Ohio that had a lot of long names that were inspired by Indian, original Indian names, Cuyahoga, and my wife being from the Pittsburgh area, Monongahela, and what are the other annoying ones down there? we shall not speak to them.
How dare they have annoying names?
Yeah, they really do. And let's see, the Board of Water Supply. There's a Board of Water Supply. That's cool. Says to expect major delays on that long name that starts with K Highway and H1 eastbound due to a water main break.
Oh, well.
So Todd might not make it tonight. the pre-show.
Maybe the full show. The pre-show that became the show.
Yeah, we'll let everyone, all of our listeners, know when that happens. It'll probably be something that happens. We could just go through the entire list of things and let Todd give us his thoughts when he gets here. We went through everything. We expect you to know what we would have said about it, because we're all friends here. So what's your response?
I don't know. I tell you, I'm still hung up on the whole GPS trying to pronounce names on the Hawaiian Islands thing. That's just,
you know, how many people's vacations have been ruined by that? You go to Hawaii to have a stress-free vacation, and your GPS starts spouting off what sounds like a completely different language because it is.
Well, as a matter of fact, John, you know, living in the greater Boston area, it's hysterical to listen to a GPS pronounce towns and roads like a normal person probably would, but nothing like a Bostonian actually pronounces those words. I get quite a kick out of that. I'm like, I have to listen to it and I think to myself, Worcester. Yeah, that's probably how it would be pronounced by a normal person, but no, it's Worcester.
Yeah. Well, when I moved down here, the road I live on is Bolivar Avenue. So, knowing about Simon Bolivar, I would think that that was how it was pronounced. And the county name is the same as well. And so, when I moved down here, I said something about Bolivar. You go, no, it's Bolivar. And it definitely is down here. I live on South Bolivar Avenue, and I'm in Bolivar County, and that is the way it's pronounced in the Mississippi Delta. Well,
now we know what the real problem with Simon Bolivar was. He wasn't pronouncing his name correctly.
I hate when you do that. I hate when I forget how to pronounce my own name.
Historical figures, they just never learn, do they?
Yeah, they don't. They really don't. Boy, I think Todd is going to really enjoy what we're doing to his podcast here. I think
this may be the last podcast, actually.
At one point, he was going to give me the credentials to upload podcasts, and then he never did. And that was likely a wise move, Todd.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. Well, actually, even if we went through we could go through. His first topic was to talk about his new website.
Yes.
So let's give some feedback that he can later edit out if he doesn't like.
So dailydoodlers.com. I have not been there yet. It is spelled exactly as you would expect it to be spelled. DailyDoodlers. There is absolutely nothing there right now as I pull it up.
It's a minimalist site.
It really is minimalist. Todd, congratulations.
Designed to chew up as little bandwidth as possible. He's thinking about.
Yeah. Wow. I can't complain about anything on this site.
Or you could complain about everything. It's all.
Well, I suppose. So this is, as our regular listeners know, Todd has decided this year that he doesn't have enough to do. So he has decided to doodle something every day. And they started out looking like my doodles look like, and now they look much, much better than anything I could ever accomplish. But he has not launched it. Apparently it does say that in our show notes. That would make sense. But if you like to share your doodles somewhere, you can do so from your own medium.com site. So if you are interested in being a part of Todd's Daily Doodlers, .com, the name makes sense, but it just, the more I say it, the more I feel kind of dirty saying it. I don't really know why.
I hope that it doesn't get caught up in the wrong search engines.
I love this idea. I've tried doing things like this in the past, and none of my friends have ever decided to go on with
it. I'll be perfectly honest with you. The reason I always joke that the reason why I wrote and the reason why I wrote software was because artistically, I stink. And my only way of being artistic was to either write words or to build software. I just never could. I'm not even a doodler.
That's the same for me. I write creative writing and I guess that's really an oxymoron. I produce creative writing. I churn it out. Sometimes it's a big steaming pile of creative writing, but I do it. And, but I can't draw anything to save myself.
No.
I mean, I was the kid. Literally, the reason that I go by John and not Jonathan is that one day in third grade, I was sick. And the next day I came in and our nameplates on our desks had been replaced where they had been printed our full names. There was in cursive script right in front of me. I thought, that is really long. I shortened this to anything, and I chopped off a few letters and went from Jonathan to John. Because, and even now, people do not compliment me on my penmanship.
Yeah, I actually, interestingly enough, I was miserable when it came to cursive writing, but I took, in junior high school, I took a drafting class. And the first thing is, you could be creative because you had lots of instruments that helped you be creative that didn't require freehand. And that's when I also learned block printing. And I was actually really, I write very clearly when I'm writing not in cursive. So as a result, the only time you ever see cursive is in my signature, and you immediately ask me why I didn't go into a career in medicine when you see that signature.
Well, I will occasionally, the only place I really use cursive anymore is in cards, greeting cards I send to people. And I ask my wife to read them before we send them out to make sure that they're legible enough that the recipient will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So good job, Todd. We appreciate your dedication to art.
Yes, absolutely.
We don't have it for that art.
Exactly.
So his next topic is something that was joked about on the internet quite a bit yesterday. The meme went around that Jeff Bezos was asking his Amazon Echo to buy something from Whole Foods and accidentally bought all of Whole Foods. That, as Todd notes, will instantly give Amazon 460 physical stores in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K.
Wow. The first thing that caught my attention was that number, $13.7 billion in cash.
Yeah.
Amazon. Yeah, exactly. That was my thought. Yep. There's a couple of companies out there, and they usually begin with the letter A, that have that much lying around to be able to do it. But it is interesting. I mean, when you think about it from a couple of perspectives, number one, they had already been tinkering with Amazon Go and the and that concept of the cashless kind of store.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they could take that to the next level. But I think the interesting was, somebody pointed out, suddenly they have countless, never mind the physical stores, but the distribution centers and everything else. They bought a lot of property suddenly that allows them to do a lot of things with it.
They did. And when you think about their grocery offerings and their food offerings through Prime Pantry and things like that, there's always been holes here and there, things that they can't offer for whatever reason, whether they don't have a distribution hub or they don't have suppliers that are willing to work with Amazon. But those same suppliers are probably very happy to work with Whole Foods.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a great thing to see how they integrate that. Well, and I have a little conspiracy theory that this is their way to roll out a crunchy Android phone, you know, targeted toward the
organic
market, like a 100% GMO, non-containing,
gluten-free,
no fillers, no additives, no genetic modification, nothing like that. And they will get hipsters around the country to go for it and buy it, because that's really the only way they're going to get a Fire phone working again.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Well, I'll tell you, what's interesting is, like I said, their stock took off. And then when you look at who took a beating in proportion, Target, Walmart, who else did I see that? Their stocks took a pounding, and it's, when Amazon is the proverbial 800-pound gorilla, and, and then suddenly, there had been, like you said, Prime Pantry was sort of this very niche kind of offering. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, overnight, it's like, wow, this changes everything.
Yeah, yeah, so it's really good.
It's interesting, and I'll be curious to see, because there's folks I know, and folks I know directly and folks I know indirectly who've been involved with Whole Foods back. I'm trying to remember what their previous name was too, from one of the mergers, but that they've had so many upheavals themselves as a company. And now it's going to be interesting to see how they fit in and assimilate. This is in the IT space. So I'll be curious to see how that all plays out. But yeah, it's, 460 physical stores and countless distribution centers. I really am going to want to watch carefully to see how those are leveraged, not only for groceries, but for other things. Be interesting. Yeah.
Well, Amazon has a good track record of certain things, and they, while they cannot get an Android phone to take off for their life's blood, they can get other things to go and take off, as is evidenced by the Amazon Kindle that's sitting right next to me within arms.
Yep.
And so we'll see. I'll be curious to see where it goes. Now, they will not get distribution into a lot of the areas of the country that I'm sure they don't have distribution into already, rural areas that don't have Whole Foods.
Right, right.
So in a sense, I think they probably had distribution in a good overlap of where they're at, but it helps to have the suppliers. It helps to have a brick and mortar place.
Yeah, it will be. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
All right, Todd's next wonderful topic that he is not here for. The Microsoft Modern Keyboard has a fingerprint reader but costs $130.
The hidden yes. Fingerprint reader. Yeah. I saw that, it's $130 for a keyboard. A fingerprint reader is the least. I expect a lot more than
it just looks exactly like the Apple keyboard that I am using right now. It's the same sort of design as the one that Apple's had for about 5-6 years now. Of course, I don't have a hidden fingerprint reader here that I know of. So I think it's a good design. I think that's improving. But Microsoft has never had a good seamless fingerprint ID way of authenticating, such as Apple has with Touch ID. So,
yeah. I don't. There's not much I can say on this other than when I saw the price. In such a commoditized kind of thing nowadays, with so many keyboards and so many options, a fingerprint reader doesn't justify $130 to mm-hmm. me. And you're right. It is a great looking. It looks nice. I'm sure even with the most solid of designs, again, you've got to find a way to justify something at that price. And, maybe some folks will, but I just, that surprised me when I saw what that was going to be priced at. So.
And similarly, Todd points out the Microsoft Modern Mouse, which is $49.99 and has a very sleek modern design look to it. That pairs well with that keyboard. I'm actually a big fan of the Microsoft Arc Mouse.
Yeah.
I've been using that since I got my Surface Pro 4, and I'm very happy with it. Yes, you are even holding it up. And if you point it the right way, it looks like a phaser from Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes, exactly.
That is always something. I say that as sitting in front of me is a Bluetooth comm badge from Next Generation. And I sat here looking at this morning going, if someone had told me that 25 years ago I'd have a functioning comm badge, I would have thought they were nuts.
Well, it's interesting. While $130 for a keyboard is a little bit high, ironically, this is still a little bit high at $50 for the mouse.
Yeah.
But it's not, at least it's more in line. If you said you really liked the feel of it and everything, I could see that one being a little bit more justifiable. But again, there's times where you price because you're getting something of value for the price. And then there's times where I almost feel like, and it's not just Microsoft, let's be honest. It's throughout the business world where you price something on the thought of, if I price it more, maybe people will think they'll perceive value in the price. And sometimes I think some of these things, like I said, $130 keyboards kind of sound like something you're almost hoping to say, well, that price should tell you that it justifies itself.
I'm looking over here. Microsoft has this weird history of peripherals and things like that. And I'm looking at all their mice right now. They have tons of mice for whatever reason. The one they do not have, and the one that I find the most interesting story, is about 5 years ago, they came out with the wireless presenter mouse.
Yes.
I don't know. Did you ever have one of those?
No, I didn't have it, but I remember it.
Presenter buttons on the back.
Yeah,
I had one of those. It was the best little mouse ever. And then at some point, the laser pointer got stuck in the on position, which is really awkward to use with someone in the same room because they think you're pointing at everything or you're trying to blind them.
And that's what I was just about to say.
If you're not doing either, it's really awkward. I mean, if it is legitimate blinding attempt, then it's okay. But
you'll remember, John, the most interesting, intriguing mouse I think I ever had was, do you remember the Bluetooth mouse we got with the Microsoft?
Oh, yeah.
That's when we still had PC card slots.
That fit into the PCMCIA slot, yes.
Exactly. It was actually this little, it folded and closed, and you could, it fit into a PC card, yeah, PCMCIA slot. So it carried perfectly, and then it popped out, and you would flip a little thing so it had more of a, it wasn't completely flat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have more of a hole to it, and you could use it. And it was this, it was a really neat mouse. It actually, where I had, I used mine for years just because I found a valid use for PCMCIA slot.
Yeah, that, I think that's why it really was a, it was at a great time. It was right when we all had ditched PCMCIA slots because we didn't need them for anything.
Exactly.
They were still on laptops. I remember the reason I got rid of mine, ironically, was I sold my last laptop that had a PCMCIA slot, I think.
Yep. Yeah, that's what happened to me too.
I just included it in the box and figured, here, someone else will get a cool little mouse to go with this ThinkPad I'm selling them.
There you go. Yeah. That was there's been some interesting ones. I got to admit, there's been some interesting ones over the years.
The Presenter Mouse, what I find really interesting is today, if you want to buy one of those, new or lightly used, they're over $100.
Wow.
There's like a niche market that apparently people really like those things. And
you could bundle that with a modern keyboard and really make a mint.
Exactly. All right. Moving right along. Forbes is talking about Google Backup and Sync launching on June 30th. Have you looked at this at all?
I haven't looked at it. My first thought when I saw it is, again, another. You know, it reminds me of cloud storage at this point. Everybody and their brother does it. I haven't seen enough to say, you know, you get back to the same thing. It's like, okay, what's the differentiation here? What makes you so special when there are so many solutions out there right now doing backup and synchronization? And, you know, knowing Google, it's going to be, it's sort of like, I think Google and Amazon lately, it's the, what's the, are they going to do it with pricing? Are they going to be a differentiator by saying you get a lot with, you know, I don't know, with Android for Work accounts or Google Enterprise, you know, that's the only thing I could see. But outside of that, we've got so many solutions.
And so I'm looking at the pricing right now. Google is offering 15 gigabytes of storage for free. You can upgrade to 100 gigabytes for $199 a month or 1 terabyte for $999 a month.
Mm-hmm.
10 terabytes for $99.99 per month. This is interesting because one of the products I was going to bring up today that I've been using for cloud backup for a while is CrashPlan.
Yeah,
and CrashPlan, I pay $150 a year for 10 computers, up to 10 computers, with unlimited cloud backup.
Exactly.
And so that's a lot cheaper than 1 terabyte for $9.99 a month. I have presently about 4 terabytes stored with CrashPlan.
Yeah.
So I just don't see in this, the client that we have a screenshot of doesn't look like it does any sort of native, like always continual backup or image backup or, I don't know.
That's what I mean. It's a somewhat crowded space with some good solutions that have, they've got traction and they've got some reputation behind them. I mean, Google obviously will always, like anybody else, it's, you know, if Google does this or Microsoft does this or Apple does this, obviously they step into the segment with their overall brand recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily buy you a ton anymore. You know, people are getting a little bit too savvy, especially on things like this. You know, you're not going to get somebody who's complete. You're not going to get the little old lady from Pasadena, you know, whose laptop is barely driven, she recognizes Google. I mean, if you're going to try to make anything out of this, you're going to be going after a segment that's a little bit too savvy. And you just described it. You spent 30 seconds making a comparison and saying, so I don't know why some of these offerings, I almost think it's a throw it up against the wall and see if it sticks.
I think that's correct. I mean, Amazon, so I've recently found out that I had cloud storage I didn't even know I had that I was paying for. Amazon years ago had some deal where you paid $20 a year and you got unlimited storage for MP3 files.
Yeah.
Cloud player. And then that morphed into something else that the price went up a little bit on, and it was included, and now it's not. And then recently I noticed it was unlimited storage for a certain, like, you know, $50 a year or something like that. And I wasn't quick enough to cancel my renewal. And then now that I've realized I had it, I got an email 2 weeks ago saying, yeah, we're getting rid of the unlimited storage option.
Yeah, so, just when you found out.
Yeah, just when I found out I even owned it. So, yeah, I think it is a lot of throw it up against the wall, see what sticks.
Yeah, I you know, and when you've got an infrastructure that allows you to throw a lot of things up against the wall. I mean, you know, like we said, we're just talking, we're Google and Amazon, you know, who obviously have the ability to offer mass storage, you know, I guess it's just, okay, this is one more offering. Let's see what happens with it. My only concern is, you know, I didn't see in this, I'm assuming this, while it's launching, it doesn't have a beta on it, because Google and the word beta usually give me a nervous tick right away.
Google, my eyes. Back up and sync, store your important data here, beta.
Beta. And a year from now, suddenly, yeah, we've decided, sorry.
Such is the thing. When Google uses the word beta, I shudder, and when Microsoft uses the word consumer preview,
yes,
I shudder as well. Live mesh, we barely knew you.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, never mind that. I've had a few people, including some coworkers who I tried to help out, who were caught up because they weren't paying close enough attention in the great OneDrive fiasco.
Oh, yes.
And then suddenly one day found their accounts locked because they were overstored. And then trying to get stuff out once you're over the limit is not as easy as you think it might be. I think, as a matter of fact, in trying to help, I thought, well, let's go to the dentist and have a couple of teeth extracted with no Novocaine. That would be less painful than trying to get your storage level down.
Ironically, that's the offering that Microsoft demands.
Yeah.
If you get two teeth extracted with no Novocaine and you go outside and you throw them at the ground while chanting Nadala, 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 all of a sudden your OneDrive unlocks. It's kind of cool that way. We just
nobody knew.
People don't know about that.
That's why you're supposed to read the EULAs.
It's buried in there. Oh, it's better than what you had to do when you had to do the Balmer chant, you know. That was two teeth, a leg, a binding contract, and arbitration all at the same time.
And at least two chairs thrown across the room.
Oh, yes. While sweating and yelling about developers. So speaking of backup, my latest tech discovery, this is something I threw in the show notes that you don't know about yet. CrashPlan, like I said, that I use, actually will do headless installs on Linux. Ooh. And I have about two or three virtual private servers that I use for testing and for production and blog and all that sort of thing. So I actually installed it on one of them, then had the other two kind of send backups to that one. And it's been really nice as a off-site backup. I used to do this quite archaically. I had an rsync server script running on my computer at home that would just download. But, you know, those pesky bandwidth caps from ISPs these days.
Dang it.
Nothing ruins your 500 gigabyte bandwidth cap like transferring the backups from a few servers nightly, or then I went weekly, and then I went to like every other week, and then it was, well, I really don't need that in that. I don't need to refresh that so often, you know. So
there were no incrementals. It was a full nightly.
Well, yeah, it sort of felt like that, even though it was rsync. So that's just it's a great option for anyone who is looking for it. The headless scenario actually isn't too hard to get up and running. There's a ton of tutorials on it. You basically install it, and then you have the client running on your computer, and you just tunnel through SSH to the engine running on the Linux machine and configure it, set it up, forget about it, and then you're back to normal, and you can change a config file, and you're back to administering your local machine. So,
nice. Very nice.
All right, and by the way, everyone, this is the full show now. we have not heard from Master Ogasawara. He is still snarling up traffic, breaking water mains, and cursing at us probably at this point.
Todd Agusawara, breaking water main since 2017.
yeah. I guess, you know, his one rabbit, the early warning rabbit, apparently was sleeping today and did not warn him about this. Or maybe it's not a weather-related problem.
There was water involved, but it wasn't coming from the sky.
Yeah, so Coco could not get involved at this point. So you have got this interesting post that I thought about this in terms of not only tech, but also self-driving cars. But why don't you explain what a former coworker of yours, hopefully was not deposed violently or something like that.
No, actually it was interesting. He posted something on Facebook, and I'll read what he posted. It's an interesting idea here. He said, with the restrictions on carrying on laptops on international flights and the threat of having your phone surrendered to customs agents nowadays, it's a matter of time before IT shops have to maintain burner laptops and cell phones that can be used temporarily, but if you lose them or they're damaged, no big deal. And it was funny, I read that and I started thinking, obviously, that with recent changes in policy, number one, the whole laptop deal obviously is a big deal from the business world, but also the phones and the surrendering and possibly giving up information. The idea of burner was one thing, but I said, what are some of the other things that enterprises have to start thinking about with this? Because, it's one thing to have a burner, but what's the data that's there, that's on the device? You know, whether it's lost, never mind the fact that you can't take the laptop with you. Let's be honest. Putting it into storage, putting it into your suitcase is a risky proposition. And never mind the fact that you don't have access to it, but somebody else now has it. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that IT have got to be thinking about? And it was funny because, nowadays, I'll tell you one thing that's big in mobile with phones is the whole idea of containerization, where, your enterprise data is separate from your personal data and it's easily manipulated. But that doesn't solve. This doesn't solve if somebody, especially in the case of a phone, where you're at a border here and somebody says, okay, open up your phone. Now I want you to log into your phone. Now I see that. I want you to log into this. Uh-huh. And it started to make me think, for a long time I used to say, by and large, Wintel, when people would talk about, Windows terminals and things like that, they while they were popular in certain scenarios, people used to talk about it being, that's the way computing's going to be. Dumb terminals, Windows terminals are going to be everything. And that time I used to think, there's a problem, a solution looking for a problem when you're thinking that way. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I started to think, is this the time where we start to look at, do our devices simply become shells now to cloud or other access? Obviously, we still have the challenges of connectivity. But, when you don't have the data locally and you don't have a connection to the network, what do you do then? I get that that's still always going to be ubiquitous. Networking is closer to reality, but it's still far from complete reality. But I started to wonder if that's where, are we now looking at a time where my laptop really should, and when we talk about things like Chromebooks, obviously, we're looking at, to a certain extent, although that obviously has some local storage capabilities, but are we looking at even with our phones, or do we say, does our phone become a flip phone and not contain anything, and then the tablet becomes a disposable, and again, it's all, of course, people at companies like Citrix are probably salivating at what I'm saying here. But does that look like where we're moving to? Interestingly enough, you even look at the whole idea of containerization and VMware with AirWatch is now with Workspace ONE is going more of that route. It's almost going the Citrix route. Mm-hmm. And that can include a mobile, a highly mobile, like a phone device. So I'm kind of, it's going to be quite a challenge because you're not necessarily just worried about something being lost. Like in the old days, you left your phone someplace and it was lost. Now you're worried about your phone or your laptop getting into somebody's hands who stand a higher probability of knowing how to get into the data and wanting to get into the data. Maybe not because they want your customer list, but they want to explore what else you've got. So,
it's interesting. You know, I think about a couple of things that came up in the last few years. So on March 20th, 2016, in Mobile Views Podcast 154, I went on a little bit of a rant about what would happen if you dropped, like imagine you're dropped into a random place with a computer that has internet access. Can you access any of your world? You know, you've got just a random shell of a computer. And I thought at the time I was talking about, you know, two-factor authentication. If I don't have my authentication devices, what do I do? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I basically came up with the idea of having a secret stash of information, an account that that doesn't have two-factor but has some enough to get me into other accounts, you know, backup codes, that sort of thing. That's one piece of the puzzle that I think we've started to think about as we've gotten more and more closely tied to our machines or our installations on our machines, you know, what you have on the cloud that comes down when you set up a new device, et cetera. And like I said, this sort of got me thinking along the lines of self-driving cars. People talk about the convenience of being able to sit in your car and not have to worry about driving, because that's so inconvenient, as Todd's finding out right now. he would be on this podcast if he had a self-driving car. But what I find interesting, as others have pointed out, is that self-driving cars destroy parking lots. You don't need them anymore. Your car just drops you off, and then it goes off wherever it's going to go. You'll park in a field for all you care, as long as it comes back to pick you up when you hit a button on your devices. So that's sort of, I wonder if we're moving into a world where that's just sort of the way, where you've got your data or you've got whatever you need. You have it secured in whatever manner you feel comfortable securing it in. And there are paranoid ways to secure things. I think about, you know, VeraCrypt and the ability to have plausible deniability with secret containers and one password that opens up the decoy data and no way of knowing if there's any real data. So if you want to be paranoid, this might be the way to go, where every device is just a shell.
Well, I think the emphasis more than ever from an enterprise perspective, speaking from the business world, is you really have to follow the principles of risk management and talk about probability and impact. You know, what's the likelihood that that something could happen? I have to turn over my phone. What's the impact if I do that? And then say, okay, based on that, what's our course of action to best mitigate the risk or mitigate the impact? I don't think you get to mitigate the risk. The way the rules are being written at this point, you say I mitigate the risk by not traveling anymore. And, you know, that's obviously in some cases, it's not possible to do that. So then you look at what do I have there for data and how sensitive is it? And there's some businesses where I think we do. When we talk about paranoia, I think some businesses sometimes treat their data with a bit too much paranoia, because when in the big picture, what's going to happen if a TSA agent looks at it? There's nothing that's going to be anything, you know, super detrimental. But when you get into some of our vertical industries today in the business world, I've worked with them before. I know their paranoia over between corporate espionage and trade secrets and intellectual property is so high. Yeah, you've got to sit down and really ask yourself the question, you know, if that risk exists and I have to face that risk, what do I do to mitigate? And like I said, maybe it is. It's cloud. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's you don't travel with something, but you have some sort of plan where I could see cottage industries. And I think you were sort of alluding to the business where, just like today, you go to Europe and you can go into a phone store and get a SIM card. Maybe you go someplace and rent, you rent a Wintel computer, or you rent not only a SIM, but a phone, so that you don't even carry it with you, you know, and then you access through the cloud. You don't want to take any chances. I don't know. Depending on the business, there's going to be a lot of enterprises that are going to have to think really carefully about this.
I just see a kiosk at a major airport that you pull up to and you press a button and you get a key to a locker.
Yep.
You go into that locker, and not only is there a laptop computer there set up exactly the way you wanted it with whatever operating system, whatever data bundle that you told it to download in advance, your phone that's got anything you needed set up on that already, and, you know, just for the heck of it, a spare change of clothes, your shaving kit, everything you need.
So
you get off the plane, you go pick up whatever you need. There's the keys to your rental car right there. You get in it, you go have your meeting, you stay overnight, you come back the next day, you dump it all off at the locker, and you're on your flight and you're gone.
I'll be honest with you.
With check bag fees going up, that would be a cheaper option in many cases.
I can see in a few years we're going to see this pop up in an airport, and the two of us are going to go, yeah, we should have done something instead of just talking about it. But
well, they don't know that we haven't patented this already. So.
Yeah, true.
That will be tomorrow's option. I recently created an LLC in my state just for fun, and it was $50. So, you know, I might be able to get a patent for like $20 or something. So we have reached the end of Todd's list, and we have no Todd. I don't know if we should... We could crack jokes. We could scare our listeners. We could tell Todd that we've done his whole job for him. I'm open to suggestions. I've never had to do this solo before. Todd never gave me training on it at all.
Well, so you're not doing it solo. I'm here with you.
I'm here.
Don't worry. I'm here for you, John.
I mean, Don, I have talked to myself randomly for an hour and a half in the past. My wife probably assumes that's what I'm doing right now. So.
I think we've beaten Todd up enough, as well as covering the topics, to where we basically can, how do they say it? We can put this in the can, you know,
we did a good job. I think,
I think so as well.
We helped out our friend Todd. I mean, Todd works hard. He's been busy, and that's what he was doing today. He was very busy with legitimate activities that he had to be away from his home for. We will be more forgiving than the bunny rabbits, and we have done his job for him.
And when we do make sure this episode is subtitled, the episode where Todd never showed up, you know.
I wish I had like a soundboard of Todd, and then I could just play a few noises of his, and then we would feel like he was here, because it's really sad without him. But I don't have the Todd soundboard now. He will, once I send him the link to the MP3 of this, he will probably edit it and put the beginning and the end. Maybe he will even intersperse himself into it, which I really hope he does, because
totally contradicting what we say, calling us idiots for what we talked about,
and then we can release the unedited version with our own new edits in it, and no one will ever really know what we said. So this is fairly close to what actually happened on Mobile Views Podcast 209, and I have been John Westfall, and he has been Don Sorcinelli, and we will talk to you, hopefully, with Mr. Ogasawara next week.